and welcome to the reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for February 9th, 2024. I'm your reader, Stephen Gaisher. DC Bureau, Election 2024, Governments and Politics, Justice. Trump claim of presidential immunity turned down by federal appeals court in DC. By Jacob Fischler and Ashley Murray, February 6th, 2024. Washington. Former President Donald Trump can be prosecuted for charges he schemed to overturn the 2020 election, a three-judge panel of a federal appeals court ruled Tuesday, rejecting Trump's argument he was immune from criminal prosecution for any alleged conduct during his presidential term. In a unanimous opinion, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals panel denied Trump's request to throw out the federal charges accusing him of lying to and encouraging supporters who turned violent on January 6, 2021. Trump and his attorneys argued the case should be dismissed because Trump was acting in his official capacity as president, and that allowing a president to be sued would have disastrous consequences. The court found those arguments were, quote, unsupported by precedent, history, or the text and structure of the Constitution, end quote. The stakes of the argument were exceptionally high, they wrote, because of the nature of the charges against Trump, which accuses the former president of attempting to subvert a core principle of U.S. democracy. Quote, we cannot accept former President Trump's claim that a president has unbounded authority to commit crimes that would neutralize the most fundamental check on executive power, the recognition and implementation of election results, they wrote. A Trump campaign spokesman said Tuesday the former president will appeal the ruling, possibly further delaying Trump's trial while he continues his campaign as the frontrunner for the Republican presidential nomination. Quote, President Trump respectfully disagrees with the D.C. Circuit's decision and will appeal it in order to safeguard the presidency and the Constitution, campaign spokesman Stephen Chung said. He did not specify whether the appeal would be to the U.S. Supreme Court or the full circuit court. The D.C. Circuit panel set a Monday deadline for a notice of appeal. The panel comprised judges appointed by presidents of both parties. Republican former President George H.W. Bush appointed Karen LeCraft Henderson. Florence Y. Pan and J. Michelle Childs were appointed by President Joe Biden, a Democrat who's likely to face Trump in the November presidential election. Nixon pardon cited. The judges wrote that former presidents have long been understood to be subject to criminal prosecution. President Gerald Ford pardoned his predecessor, Richard Nixon, which both understood as shielding Nixon from criminal indictment related to Watergate, the judges said. It is also consistent with the Constitution, they wrote. Quote, it would be a striking paradox if the president, who alone is vested with the constitutional duty to, subquote, take care that the laws be faithfully executed, end subquote, were the sole officer capable of defying those laws with impunity, they wrote, quoting the Constitution. They rejected Trump's argument that allowing prosecutions would open the door to harassment of former presidents by an opposing political party, noting that has not happened to the 44 presidents who held office before Trump. Quote, we conclude that the interest in criminal accountability held by both the public and the executive branch outweighs the potential risks of chilling presidential action and permitting vexatious litigation, they wrote. And in Trump's case, the nature of the accusations, which would constitute, quote, an unprecedented assault on the structure of our government, end quote, provide greater reason to allow criminal charges, the judges wrote. A four-count indictment last year accused Trump of conspiring to overturn the 2020 presidential election. The indictment accuses Trump of working with a group of co-conspirators to recruit false slates of electors, lying to the public about non-existent determinative election fraud, and encouraging supporters to obstruct the election certification in a violent attack on the Capitol on January 6, 2021. Accepting Trump's immunity argument would give presidents, quote, carte blanche to violate the rights of individual citizens to vote and to have their votes count, end quote. Trump's total immunity claim would place the president beyond the reach of all three branches of government, they wrote. Quote, we cannot accept that the office of the presidency places its former occupants above the law for all time thereafter, they wrote. Henderson, Pan, and Childs previewed their skepticism of the executive immunity claims during early January oral arguments with Trump present in the Washington, D.C. courtroom. Most notably, during the tough questioning, Trump attorney D. John Sauer appeared to defend that presidents could be immune from criminal prosecution, even for ordering assassination of political rivals. Tuesday's appellate decision does not make any determination about the merits of the underlying federal charges accusing Trump of election interference. Fred Wertheimer, the president of government accountability group Democracy 21, called the matter, quote, the most important criminal case pending against former President Trump. Further appeals. The D.C. Circuit order set a Monday deadline for a notice of appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. That notice would maintain the freeze on pretrial proceedings that has been on hold since Trump appealed a ruling on his immunity claims in December. The court is not required to take the appeal, but exercising his appellate options will help Trump extend the case potentially beyond Election Day. Trump and his legal team have not explicitly said it is part of their strategy to delay the case as long as possible, but have taken opportunities to draw out the proceedings. Trump could also appeal to the full D.C. Circuit, but the court rarely grants such requests, and the panel said Tuesday that simply asking for a rehearing would not delay a trial schedule. The Supreme Court is also, quote, unlikely, end quote, to hear an appeal, according to legal experts Norman L. Eisen, Matthew A. Seligman, and Joshua Kolb, who wrote an outline of potential timelines in the case for Just Security, a site devoted to foreign policy, democracy, and security analysis that published January 9th. Trump raised his immunity defense in the trial court, where he faces federal charges related to the 2021 attack on the Capitol, saying he could not be prosecuted for the actions alleged in the indictment because he was acting in his official capacity as president to counteract election fraud and because he had already been acquitted in an impeachment trial. U.S. District Judge Tanya S. Chutkan denied those claims, a decision Trump appealed to the D.C. Circuit. On Friday, Chutkan also officially postponed his trial, which had been set to begin March 4th. Hours before the three-judge panel issued its ruling, Trump posted in all capital letters on his online platform Truth Social that, quote, if immunity is not granted to a president, every president that leaves office will be immediately indicted by the opposing party. Without complete immunity, a president of the United States will not be able to properly function, he wrote. Reaction rolls out. Several anti-Trump groups celebrated the ruling Tuesday, while Republicans on Capitol Hill launched a new effort to defend the former president through a House resolution. The Open Records watchdog group, American Oversight, which filed an amicus brief in the case, released a statement praising that appellate judges had, quote, resoundingly rejected Trump's claim that a president can commit crimes with impunity and avoid prosecution unless Congress impeaches and convicts him first, end quote. Quote, we appreciate the court's careful consideration of our argument that Trump's appeal was premature. By addressing the argument fully, the court has removed the risk that this issue might be raised for the first time in any subsequent appeals, including the Supreme Court, causing even more delay. Today's important ruling affirms a core principle of our democracy. No one is above the law, end quote, continued the statement from Heather Sawyer, American Oversight's executive director. Wertheimer noted Trump has, throughout his career, employed delay tactics in court proceedings and that, quote, his efforts in this case are part of his oft-used strategy, end quote. Quote, Trump's goal is to get his criminal trial postponed until after the 2024 presidential election, at which time, if he wins election, he can order his new attorney general to drop the case, he wrote. He urged the Supreme Court to quickly dispose of a further appeal. The Defend Democracy Project, an advocacy group focused on election integrity, said the appeals court ruling, quote, upheld the Constitution and common sense. Trump can and will be tried on criminal charges, end quote. Quote, a core principle of American democracy is that the law applies equally to everyone, even a president. Anyone who attempts to take away our freedom to choose our own leaders must be held accountable, read the organization statement issued after the ruling. During a previously planned press conference Tuesday to announce a resolution absolving Trump from any action on January 6, 2021, far-right House Republicans decried any scrutiny of the former president. Lauren Boebert of Colorado said the several criminal cases against Trump amount to a, quote, witch hunt. Quote, it's absolutely unprecedented, and the woke mob, the fake news, and the leftist government officials who are engaging in this extortion should be downright ashamed of themselves. All of the bogus cases against President Trump are, plain and simple, election interference in the 2024 election, said Boebert, who signed on to the resolution led by Florida Republican Matt Gaetz. Trump also faces criminal charges in three other cases. State election interference charges in Georgia make similar accusations as the federal indictment. State charges in New York accuse him of falsifying business records by making unsanctioned hush money payments from campaign accounts. And a federal grand jury in Florida accused him of mishandling classified documents. None of the cases have reached the trial phase, while Trump continues to build momentum toward a third Republican nomination for president. D.C. Bureau, Election 2024, Government and Politics, Justice. Trump, quote, did not engage in insurrection, end quote, on January 6th. New U.S. House resolution claims. By Ashley Murray, February 6th, 2024. Washington. In a meandering press conference Tuesday that repeated false 2020 election fraud claims, downplayed well-documented violence, and name-called journalists, far-right U.S. House members defended former President Donald Trump against any role he may have played in the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. Representative Matt Gaetz of Florida and several co-sponsors convened the briefing to announce a non-binding resolution declaring, quote, former President Donald J. Trump did not engage in insurrection or rebellion against the United States or give aid or comfort to the enemies thereof, end quote. Quote, we believe Congress has a unique role in making that declaration, Gaetz said during the one-hour event featuring numerous member speeches. A list posted Tuesday by Gaetz showed 65 co-sponsors among the 219 Republicans in the House. Gaetz introduced the one-paragraph Sense of Congress just 2 days before the U.S. Supreme Court is scheduled to hear arguments over whether Colorado officials can bar Trump's name from the 2024 ballot because he allegedly violated Section 3 of the Constitution's 14th Amendment, referred to as the Insurrection Clause. Quote, it's not the job of the states, and especially not the job of some bureaucrats in Colorado, to make this assessment and interfere with the rights of voters to cast their vote for the candidate of their choice, Gaetz said. The event included members of leadership, including House GOP Conference Chair Elise Stefanik of New York, who said that it is, quote, a fact, end quote, that Trump didn't engage in an insurrection. Quote, rogue far-left Democrat operatives are attempting to use this lie to illegally take President Trump off the ballot, she said. Colorado Supreme Court ruling. The Colorado State Supreme Court on December 19th overturned a lower court's decision the former president and current GOP frontrunner should be on the ballot, setting the stage for a high-profile battle in the U.S. Supreme Court. Similar lawsuits to keep Trump off the ballot failed in several other states, including Maine, Alaska, and South Carolina. The likely 2024 Republican presidential nominee faces 91 criminal charges, including a federal indictment that details Trump's actions leading up to and on January 6, 2021. Among the alleged actions, orchestrating fake elector schemes in several states and pressuring former Vice President Mike Pence to stop Congress from certifying the 2020 presidential election results. Representative Eric Burleson of Missouri said during Tuesday's press conference that protesters flocked to the U.S. Capitol on January 6 because they were frustrated, quote, not just at what they saw happening in the election process, but because they were frustrated with you, the media, referring to reporters in the room. Quote, when I was in the Missouri Capitol building, we had protesters come in all the time. We would call what happened on that day a Wednesday in the Missouri Capitol, okay? We welcome free speech, said Burleson, who was one of many to deliver remarks Tuesday. Attacks on the news media were a hallmark of Trump's 2016 presidential campaign rallies and have since become a common refrain from the former president and his supporters. Representative Diane Harshbarger of Tesi said Trump and his supporters were, quote, vilified for doing nothing more than exercising their First Amendment rights. A wealth of video documentation shows protesters at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th breaking windows, attacking police officers, and rummaging through lawmakers' papers and property. The Department of Justice has arrested more than 1,000 January 6th protesters in the past 3 years. Nearly 800 have been sentenced for criminal activity. Harshbarger said the Justice Department has been, quote, weaponized, end quote, and accused journalists of reporting, quote, half-truths or no truths at all, end quote. After citing Christian scripture, Harshbarger said, quote, so my message to the American people is simple. Armor up and get ready for the spiritual battle ahead, because it's going to be a battle. Quote, a campaign of disinformation. Criticism swiftly followed the press conference as advocacy organizations said GOP lawmakers lied about what happened on January 6th. Quote, make no mistake, the violence that took place on January 6th, 2021 was an insurrection, read a statement from the Not Above the Law Coalition, representing 150 organizations. Quote, despite attempts by Matt Gaetz and his fellow MAGA extremists to rewrite history through a campaign of disinformation, they cannot erase the fact that this brutal attack left 5 people dead, over 100 law enforcement officers injured, and Donald Trump and his allies facing multiple criminal charges for their involvement. In a January 22nd email to fellow House Republicans, Gaetz staff members urged colleagues to sign onto the resolution, calling it a, quote, no-brainer. Quote, controversial only to the most extreme of the far left, and a statement of fact that every single Republican can be expected to support. If the left has the courage to interfere in our elections and weaponize the judicial system against our brethren, we must have the courage to express what is self-evident, read the email signed by Gaetz's legislative counsel, John Wilson. At the time, Gaetz's office said 27 Republicans had co-signed the resolution. House Speaker Mike Johnson's office did not respond Tuesday afternoon to questions on whether he would bring the resolution to the floor for a vote. Republican Senator J.D. Vance of Ohio sponsored a companion resolution in the Senate. Gaetz told reporters he had been in communication with Johnson, a Louisiana Republican, and Trump about the effort. When asked Tuesday why House Republicans would focus on a non-binding resolution rather than other efforts, for example, seeking a two-thirds congressional override of the insurrection clause, Gaetz responded, quote, the best is yet to come. Education, government, and politics. Lawmakers move to shorten student teaching requirements, expand work-based learning. By Brooklyn Dracy, February 6, 2024. Proposed legislation that would shorten student teaching requirements for certain students and expand work-based and other experiential learning programs will move ahead with a promise to address lingering concerns from lobbyists and lawmakers. Senate Study Bill 3143, which passed out of a 3-member Senate subcommittee Tuesday, makes changes to student teaching, work-based learning, career and technical education, and the Future Ready Iowa Last Dollar Scholarship Program. Senator Kerry Grünhagen, Republican Walcott, chaired the subcommittee, and was joined by Senator Molly Donahue, Democrat Cedar Rapids, and Senator Jeff Taylor, Republican Sioux Center. Student teaching parameters for certain groups would change under the new bill, shortening the current requirement of 14-week student teaching to 4. Eligible students would need to have both certification and experience as a substitute teacher or paraeducator, have the primary responsibility of planning, teaching, and assessing students while student teaching, and undergo student teaching in the classroom of a cooperating teacher licensed in the subject and grade they're teaching. The requirements for shortening student teaching time would also be satisfied if the student is a certified paraeducator, bears the brunt of responsibilities, and is supervised by an appropriate teacher for one half of each school day, and works as a paraeducator for one half of each day during student teaching. The bill would repeal and consolidate workforce programs that fall under regional and industry sector partnership and the statewide work-based learning intermediary network. They and similar programs would be funded by a new Workforce Opportunity Fund, established with a $30 million investment from the state's Unemployment Compensation Reserve Fund and handled by Iowa Workforce Development. Workforce Opportunity Fund dollars would go to maintaining and expanding state workforce programs. Work-based learning would also be added to career and technical education classes that 9th through 12th grade schools are required to offer through the bill, and would allow work-based learning instruction to be offered when school is not in session. The bill also modified the definitions of, quote, work-based learning, end quote, quote, quality pre-apprenticeship program, end quote, and, quote, youth apprenticeship, end quote, for the Iowa Registered Apprenticeship Act. Eligibility for the Last Dollar Scholarship Program would be changed to require students to have an expected family contribution of $20,000 or less based on the FAFSA. The bill would also expand the eligible programs under the scholarships to include programs approved by the College Student Aid Commission and Iowa Workforce Development that would provide credentials related to at least one of the 10, quote, priority in demand fields, end quote, determined by the Workforce Development Board, according to the bill. Melissa Peterson, Legislative and Policy Director for the Iowa State Education Association, showed support for expanding opportunities for students in career and technical education programs, but said lessening the required amount of student teaching experience hours for certain people has caused the organization, quote, some heartburn. The certification and responsibilities of teachers, paraeducators, and substitute teachers are all distinctly different, Peterson said, and each of the professions are experiencing shortages in the state. Other programs are also already in place to help accelerate teaching, education, and training, she said. Quote, we want to be really, really cautious, and I hope that we could work with the governor's office and the Department of Education to ensure we're not doing anything to dilute the quality of the teacher preparation experiences our educational professionals are receiving, Peterson said. Peterson also voiced concerns about the changes to the Last Dollar Scholarship Program, saying it could decrease the number of eligible students when waiting lists for funding are already long. Iowa Board of Regents Representative Jillian Carlson also had concerns about how changes to student teaching policies could impact students seeking certain endorsements like special education, where they must fulfill requirements for hours spent in both general education and special education classes. This could shorten the time they spend in both, making them less prepared. This wouldn't necessarily shorten the time it takes to earn a degree either, she said. Carlson said another concern is for people trying to get their paraeducator or substitute teacher licensing just to shrink the amount of time they need to student teach. Margaret Buckton, representing the Urban Education Network and Rural School Advocates of Iowa, brought up the Teacher and Paraeducator Registered Apprenticeship Program as one example of supporting educators in their mission of earning credentials while working in the classroom. She said it makes sense to shorten the amount of required student teaching time for those who have similar licensure and classroom experience, but it could be a different situation for those looking to work in special education. Donahue shared the concerns voiced by others in the meeting and said she knows from her own career as a teacher that 4 weeks is not enough time to be fully prepared for the profession. Quote, I would like to see the student teaching stricken from it, Donahue said. I think that our universities and our schools will put together a program that is necessary for teachers to be fully prepared to be in a classroom. Taylor said that in his discussions with the head of the teacher preparation program at Dort University, where he teaches, a couple of concerns came up related to students not getting enough experience having sole responsibility of a classroom or feeling pressure to get additional credentials in order to get paid while student teaching. The bill addresses this first concern, Taylor said, by qualifying that the student teaching duration can only be reduced if, quote, the student bears the primary responsibility for planning, instruction, and assessment within the classroom during the student teaching experience, according to the bill. With his other concerns still standing, Taylor said he'd support the bill going forward. Representatives from the Iowa Association of Business and Industry, ABI, and Iowa Federation of Labor, AFL-CIO, also expressed concern about where the funding for the Workforce Opportunity Fund would come from, the Unemployment Compensation Reserve Fund. J.D. Davis, ABI President of Public Policy, said money from the reserve fund can only be used to, quote, pay unemployment benefits to the extent that monies in the Unemployment Compensation Fund are insufficient to pay benefits during a calendar quarter, end quote. Quote, we believe the intent of the Unemployment Compensation Reserve Fund is to solely be used for unemployment compensation, said Peter Hurd, lobbyist for the Iowa Federation of Labor. Our best hope is that we could find some money somewhere else to fund the program. Donahue also agreed that pulling $30 million from the unemployment fund is an issue and said she'd hate to repeal programs the community colleges worked hard to build. Gruenhagen assured the group when saying he would sign the bill to pass through the subcommittee that they will have more time to tackle any worries that still remain. Quote, "We can continue having those discussions to address those concerns and make sure everything's covered as we move forward," Gruenhagen said. The bill moves to the full Senate Workforce Committee for further consideration. Government and politics, working and economy, capital clicks. Bill proposes extending state's college savings plan to more apprenticeships. By Robin Opsahl, February 6, 2024. A bill moved forward by lawmakers Tuesday would expand what secondary education and training programs can be funded through the state's college savings plan. The Iowa 529 plan is a way for families to save funds for education costs for colleges, universities, trade schools, and apprenticeship programs, with earnings not subject to federal or state tax when used for, quote, qualified education expenses. Under current law, withdrawals from a 529 plan related to apprenticeship programs that do not earn college credits are excluded from the calculation of net income for individual income tax if it's a program certified through the Federal National Apprenticeship Act. Senate Study Bill 3128 would expand that definition to include apprenticeships registered with the Iowa Office of Apprenticeship. The bill would expand the definition for accepted apprenticeships through the state tax system, allowing for these programs to be excluded from the computation net income for individual income taxes when using 529 plan funds. It would not apply to federal tax treatment, however. If the apprenticeship program is only registered with the Iowa office and not with the U.S. Secretary of Labor, using funds from the account for that education would be considered a, quote, non-qualified withdrawal, end quote, and earnings would be subject to federal tax as well as a 10% withdrawal penalty. Molly Wyden with the State Treasurer's Office said these conflicts with federal law could not be resolved through state legislation. But there has been recent movement in the U.S. House Ways and Means Committee to expand 529 plan fund to use more apprenticeship and training programs like commercial driver's license programs for trucking. Wyden said that in Iowa, there are already opportunities to use 529 plan dollars on these programs, as many are trade-specific training programs offered at Iowa community colleges. Quote, "So there are opportunities, and we would be really excited and champion the federal government expanding the use of the 529, she said. Jim Obradovich, a lobbyist speaking on behalf of the Iowa Public Airports Association, said the organization was supportive of steps to expand the permitted use of 529 funds to cover professional training costs, like training for pilot's licenses. Though there are some professional pilot training programs at Iowa community colleges, under the bill, people would be able to use the education investment funds for other training opportunities. Quote, "That's why the concept and somehow providing some more access to maybe these types of savings programs for folks who decide that that's the career they want to go into would be a benefit to take a look at," Obradovich said. There are still questions about why certain apprenticeship and training programs are not currently allowed under the federal 529 plan regulations. Issues like the ability to accept federal funding may be a qualifying factor for institutions, Senator Adrian Dickey, Republican PacWood, said. Dickey said that moving forward, he plans to discuss the bill with members of industries that would be impacted to see if they would be interested in working to meet those requirements or advocate for changes in federal law regarding 529 plans. Dickey said, while there are, quote, too many unknowns, end quote, with how the bill would operate right now, that he believed it was important to keep it alive in order to continue working on the issue. He also said the bill could still play an important role in sending a message to federal lawmakers that this is a topic states care about. Quote, "Hopefully during the session even, we will find out what it is that we need to change into this or what those organizations need to be able to accept, parenthetically, federal money, and parenthetical, that is the roadblock, to change the bill to accommodate that," Dickey said. Jim Obradovich is married to Iowa Capital Dispatch Editor-in-Chief Kathy Obradovich. You are listening to the reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for February 9th, 2024, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's continue with this week's stories. Ag and Environment, capital clicks. Former Iowa State Ag Secretary Bill Northey dies at age 64. By Jared Strong, February 5th, 2024. Bill Newby, who was Iowa's top agriculture official for more than a decade and a leader at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, died recently at the age of 64. His death was publicly announced Monday by the Agribusiness Association of Iowa, of which he was chief executive. Quote, Bill was a tireless advocate for agriculture and a beloved leader, the association said. An association spokesperson said, Northey died suddenly but did not know the cause of death. Funeral arrangements are pending. Northey, a longtime farmer, was Iowa's agriculture secretary from 2007 to 2018, after which he was undersecretary for farm production and conservation at the USDA until 2021. He was an Iowa State University graduate who was raised on a farm in Dickinson County, according to the association. He was president of the National Corn Growers Association in the mid-1990s, and a decade later was first elected agriculture secretary for Iowa. Quote, Bill was a great leader whose work ethic and passion for Iowa agriculture was unmatched, Governor Kim Reynolds said in a statement. Iowans and farmers around the country were fortunate to have such a rock-solid advocate and friend. Reynolds ordered flags at half-staff until after Northey's funeral. Numerous public officials and agricultural groups heaped praise on Northey on Monday. The U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, quote, Bill's colleagues, the Iowa agriculture community, and so many who knew him, will fill the absence of such a passionate, knowledgeable, and devoted leader for a long time to come. Mike Naig, the current state agriculture secretary, quote, As secretary, he had a tremendous positive impact on our state and the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. But his influence went well beyond our borders. Whether it was on issues like soil conservation, water quality, renewable energy, foreign animal disease preparedness, or trade, Bill was respected nationally and internationally. Bill was smart, and people looked toward his leadership on every issue he focused on. U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, quote, Today, the Iowa farm community lost a giant. Bill Northey was a dear friend and fierce advocate for the family farmer. As Iowa's Secretary of Agriculture and Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation at the United States Department of Agriculture under President Trump, Bill's commitment to agriculture, biofuels, and conservation were unmatched. Jeff Kaufman, Chairman of the Republican Party of Iowa, quote, His legacy extends far beyond the boundaries of his political office. Bill's warmth, approachability, and genuine concern for the well-being of his state and Iowans will be his legacy. Iowa Farm Bureau Federation, quote, The Iowa Farm Bureau is saddened to learn of the passing of Bill Northey, a tireless champion, defender, and promoter of farmers and agriculture at both the state and federal levels. His steadfast dedication and life's work to ensuring agriculture thrives will continue to impact farm families here in Iowa and across the nation for years to come. Monty Shaw, Executive Director of the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association, quote, Bill has always been a thoughtful but forceful leader for farmers and rural America. He was an incredible friend to ethanol and biodiesel producers because he saw the big picture. This wasn't just about turning a profit. This was about preserving a way of rural life. U.S. Senator Joni Ernst, quote, Bill Northey dedicated his life to Iowa agriculture. Throughout his career as a farmer, leader in key agricultural organizations, Iowa Secretary of Agriculture, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture Undersecretary, he was a steadfast advocate for the producers that feed and fuel our world. He helped establish Iowa as a national leader on key initiatives, including ethanol and the nutrient reduction strategy, while always remaining grounded and connected to his family farm in Dickinson County. Ag and Environment, Government and Politics, Capital Clicks. Iowa Senate revives bill to block drone surveillance of livestock. By Jared Strong, February 6, 2024. A bill approved by the Iowa House last year that would prohibit people from flying surveillance drones within 400 feet of open feedlots and animal confinements received committee approval in the Senate on Tuesday. House File 572 is part of a spate of measures state lawmakers have considered in recent years to shield livestock producers from covert investigations by animal welfare groups. The bill would make it a simple misdemeanor, punishable by up to 30 days in jail, to fly a, quote, remotely piloted aircraft, end quote, too close to a farmstead or livestock facility. The crime is enhanced to a serious misdemeanor with up to 1 year jail sentence if the drone is equipped with surveillance equipment such as a camera or microphone. The prohibition doesn't apply to owners of the facilities, people who have their permission, those who are engaged in a, quote, commercial or agricultural, end quote, use, and employees of government entities, public utilities, and railroad companies. The bill would also allow farmers to obtain court injunctions to bar offenders from operating drones for up to 2 years and to compel them to delete drone footage of the livestock facilities. There was little discussion of the bill Tuesday before the Senate Natural Resources and Environment Committee approved it without any apparent opposition. The bill moves next to the full Senate. The bill had broad support in the House, which passed it in April with an 87-10 vote. It is still eligible for consideration in the Senate this year because the legislative session is part of the same General Assembly. Last month, a federal appeals court overturned injunctions against two other so-called, quote, ag-gag, end quote, laws in Iowa. One prohibits people from using deception to enter a livestock facility, and the other bars filming while trespassing. Healthcare. Justice. Study cited by Texas judge in abortion pill case retracted. Mifepristone has more than 5.6 million uses since receiving FDA approval over 20 years ago. By Sophia Resnick, February 6, 2024. Two of the key studies cited by plaintiffs and judges as evidence that medication abortion should be pulled from the market or heavily restricted have been retracted because of undeclared conflicts of interest and unreliable findings, academic publisher Sage announced Monday. State's newsroom was the first to report last year that Sage had opened an investigation into some of the research featured prominently in the initial Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine v. U.S. Food and Drug Administration case, whose appeal goes before the U.S. Supreme Court next month. The case is centered on mifepristone, part of a two-drug regimen used to terminate pregnancies and to manage miscarriages. Sage retracted three studies published in its journal, Health Services Research and Managerial Epidemiology, which were funded and produced by the Charlotte Lozier Institute. The research arm of the influential Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America, which works to elect federal and state anti-abortion lawmakers. Quote, following Committee on Publication Ethics COPE guidelines, we made this decision with the journal's editor because of undeclared conflicts of interest and after expert reviewers found that the studies demonstrate a lack of scientific rigor that invalidates or renders unreliable the author's conclusions, reads a statement issued by Sage. The studies are a longitudinal cohort study of emergency room utilization following mifepristone, chemical and surgical abortions, 1999 through 2015, published in 2021. A post hoc exploratory analysis. Induced abortion complications mistaken for miscarriage in the emergency room are a risk factor for hospitalization, published in 2022. Doctors who perform abortions, their characteristics and patterns of holding and using hospital privileges, published in 2019. The lead author for each study was James Studnicki, Charlotte Lozier's vice president and director of data analytics, who was on the editorial board of Health Services Research and Managerial Epidemiology at the time the studies were published. Quote, upon submission, the lead author declared no conflicts of interest and all authors declared the same within each article. However, all but one of the author's articles had an affiliation with one or more of Charlotte Lozier Institute, Elliott Institute, and American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, all pro-life advocacy organizations that explicitly support judicial action to restrict access to mifepristone, the Sage statement reads. One of those groups, AAPLOG, is a plaintiff in the Alliance v. FDA lawsuit. In a statement, Studnicki and Tessa Longbons, senior research associate, called the Sage retraction a, quote, baseless ideological attack on our scientific research and experts. To date, Sage hasn't identified a single substantive objection to the studies to the research team. However, Sage has launched a political assault against an organization whose research has been cited in major pro-life legal victories, such as the Dobbs decision and the AHM v. FDA case. Even after reviewing and publishing the study and standing by it for years, Sage has now caved to outside partisan pressures that dominate elite circles, Studnicki and Longbaum said. Quote, sadly, this incident points to a larger, newer phenomenon, which is many of our scientific institutions no longer stand in defense of open inquiry. Rather, what we're seeing is a biased faction in the medical community that holds all the power and attempts to suppress any research that cuts against their approved pro-abortion narrative, Studnicki and Longbaum said. Last year, pharmaceutical sciences professor Chris Atkins contacted Sage with his concerns about the 2021 longitudinal cohort study, which was cited by U.S. District Judge Matthew Kaczmarek as evidence that the anti-abortion doctor plaintiffs had standing to sue because, quote, they allege adverse events from chemical abortion drugs can overwhelm the medical system and place, subquote, enormous pressure and stress, end subquote, on doctors during emergencies and complications. That paper looked at Medicaid patients' visits to the emergency rooms within 30 days of having an abortion and concluded that medication abortion is excessively risky. Quote, I can't prove that there was intent to deceive, but I struggle to find an alternative reason to present your data in such a way that exaggerates the magnitude, Atkins told State's newsroom at the time. They're misrepresenting its conclusions to begin with. The epidemiology and public health experts who conducted an independent post-publication peer review of the three studies ultimately agreed with Atkins. Regarding the 2021 and a follow-up 2022 paper using the same dataset, the experts found, quote, fundamental problems with the study design and methodology, end quote. Quote, unjustified or incorrect factual assumptions, end quote. Quote, material errors in the author's analysis of the data, end quote. And, quote, misleading presentations of the data, end quote. The 2019 article, using a different dataset, contained, quote, unsupported assumptions, end quote. Quote, misleading presentations of the findings, end quote, and, quote, demonstrate a lack of scientific rigor and render the author's conclusion unreliable, the experts found. Experts have cited mifepristone's safety and efficacy with more than 5.6 million uses over the past two decades. The FDA has recorded 28 deaths, but has stated that the drug cannot be identified as the cause of those deaths. Government and politics, healthcare, capital clicks. Bill would increase penalties for non-consensual, quote, death of an unborn person, end quote. By Robin Opsahl, February 6, 2024. Republican lawmakers advanced a bill Tuesday increasing penalties for causing the termination of a pregnancy without consent, while adding language that some advocates said was, quote, anti-abortion. House Study Bill 621 would make the termination of a pregnancy without the consent of the pregnant person a Class A felony if caused in the act of a forcible felony such as murder, assault, or sexual abuse. Currently, the crime is a Class B felony. It would also amend current language on these crimes from the termination of a, quote, human pregnancy, end quote, to the, quote, death of an unborn person, end quote. Maisie Stillwell, with the Planned Parenthood Advocates of Iowa, spoke in opposition to the bill, saying the measure is a tactic to codify the term, quote, unborn person, end quote, in reference to a fetus, into Iowa law. The bill does not address any pressing concerns, Stillwell said, but will further stigmatize abortion patients and, quote, undermine the rights of pregnant Iowans, end quote. Quote, this bill opens an unneeded door for further legislative attacks on pregnant Iowans, including additional criminalization and surveillance, she said. There's certainly no justification for why this bill is necessary. Other lobbyists with groups like the Family Planning Council of Iowa and the Interfaith Alliance spoke against moving forward the bill, saying the use of, quote, unborn person, end quote, could lead to potential restrictions on access to contraception and curb pregnant women's ability to access care. Some supporters of the bill, including Tom Chapman with the Iowa Catholic Conference, disputed claims that the legislation was related to abortion. But Danny Carroll with the Family Leader, a conservative Christian organization, praised the bill for including language often used by anti-abortion advocates. Quote, the bill acknowledges quite clearly what we all know. Life begins at the moment of conception, Carroll said. Representative Beth Wessel Kroschel, Democrat Ames, criticized the legislation for putting, quote, a lot of medical care at risk, end quote, while not addressing any new concerns, as felony penalties already exist for non-consensual termination of a pregnancy. Republican Representatives Schuyler Wheeler and Charlie Thompson moved to advance the legislation to the full House Judiciary Committee. Education, government, and politics. Opponents say bill violates parents' right to change child's name, pronouns. By Robin Opsahl, February 5th, 2024. Republican lawmakers on an Iowa House panel advanced legislation Monday that opponents said would allow school employees to ignore a parent's request that their child be allowed to use a different name or pronouns than they were assigned at birth. Students, parents, and education advocates said the bill, which would prohibit disciplinary action against school staff and students who do not use a person's preferred name and pronouns, would violate the, quote, parental rights, end quote, law signed last session. Lawmakers heard Monday from lobbyists and members of the public at the subcommittee meeting for House File 2139. The bill would forbid school districts and charter schools from giving, quote, verbal or written reprimands, end quote, to people who use a student's or school employee's legal name instead of their preferred name or for not using their preferred pronouns. The bill also bars stricter disciplinary measures for students, such as suspension or expulsion, and for teachers, school staff, and contractors, such as termination of employment, demotion, or financial penalties. Matthew McIver, who has a transgender child, was among opponents who said this law directly contradicts Senate File 496, a law signed by Governor Kim Reynolds in 2023. The law, parts of which are currently being challenged in court, requires school districts to notify parents and seek permission if their child requests using a different name or pronouns than they were assigned at birth. McIver said this bill would allow schools to override parents' wishes for their child's preferred name and pronouns to be used and respected. Quote, "This bill is a direct abrogation of parents' rights," McIver said. "If I have already identified for the district the preferred name and gender and pronouns of my child, saying that there is no consequence to a teacher not using what I have clearly communicated to the school district per the existing law, strips me of my rights as a parent for determining what is best for my child." Timber Stevens, a 14-year-old student, said he has family and friends who would be harmed by the legislation, as it would allow them to be targeted at school with no repercussions. Quote, "There is no reason to allow our teachers to bully and belittle children," Stephen said. "If you vote to pass this bill, it shows you're willing to enable harassment at Iowa schools for the single reason of targeting minorities. It's time we move past this and focus on actual issues that need actual solutions." Ryan Benn, with the Family Leader, said the measure was necessary to protect, quote, "teachers of faith," end quote, and that parents' rights in regard to their children's education do not override teachers' rights to uphold their personal religious beliefs by not using a transgender child's preferred name and pronouns. Quote, "We need more teachers, not less," Ben said. "And when there's teachers of faith that they believe there's two genders, male and female, and believe you can't identify something that you're not, and just, you know, simple, common sense beliefs like that, ellipses, they want to be able to not violate their conscience when dealing with their class and doing their job." Pam Gronau, a parent speaking in favor of the bill, said the bill was necessary, sharing the story of a non-binary middle school teacher who scolded a student for using, quote, "Mrs.," end quote, instead of, quote, "teacher," end quote, as an honorific while addressing them, requiring the student to write an apology letter explaining why what they did was disrespectful. Quote, "We have taught our children that there are two genders, male and female," Gronau said. "We have taught them to use pronouns based on those two genders. I believe this teacher overstepped their role by making the student write an apology explaining why he believed this was disrespectful. This is an example of the indoctrination that's taking place in school today with our children, and it has to stop." Melissa Peters, representing the Iowa State Education Association, said if the example presented by Gronau occurred in an Iowa school, it would already be a violation that would cause an administrator to refer the educator to the State Board of Educational Examiners if reported. The ISEA is not aware of any school districts in the state currently punishing teachers or students for using a person's wrong name or pronouns, she said. Outside of teachers having objections to using a transgender student's preferred name and pronouns, Speaker said the bill would also allow bullying of transgender students by their peers. Catherine Knight said the bill would strip schools of the ability to help students who are facing discrimination or bullying because they are transgender. Quote, "As a parent, I am sickened, exhausted, and angry by these attacks on children who are made to feel unsafe and threatened while the bullies get away with it," Knight said. "It is a backward, upside down, and cruel situation when the adults in the room not only look away from the bullying, but promote it." Keenan Crow, with One Iowa, an LGBTQ advocacy group, said, "It's also important to note that accidents are already protected, and that no one is currently being penalized for making a mistake while using a person's name or pronouns." Quote, "Harassment is a pattern of conduct. It is not a single incident," Crow said. "It's certainly not a mistake. What we're talking about here is intentional, continued, ongoing, incorrect usage of a name or pronoun that can be incredibly damaging to a student." The legislation passed 2-1 with Republican Representatives Henry Stone and Bill Gustoff moving the bill forward, while Representative Monica Kurth, Democrat Davenport, voted against it. The bill moves next to the House Education Committee. Education, Government, and Politics. Iowa House Democrats introduce bill to tackle rising tuition rates. By Brooklyn Dracy, February 7, 2024. Avery Detvarn didn't realize just how expensive her college dreams were until she began the application process. She said at a press conference Wednesday that she felt her heart break when her high school counselor said she wouldn't be able to attend college if she couldn't afford to fill the gaps left after seeking out public and private loans, financial aid, and scholarships in order to pay for her tuition. Now a University of Iowa second-year student, Detvarn accepted a loan from a family member to help achieve her dream because no relatives had a credit score high enough to co-sign for a private loan. "Not everyone can receive the same support she did," she said. She came to the Capitol to advocate for students who have struggled with tuition and fees, and to show her support for legislation that would keep costs from crawling even higher over the course of their college career. Quote, "Young Iowan adults are struggling to pursue their collegiate dreams because of the high and rising tuition prices, and this bill would directly impact these students and allow us to follow our dreams without the additional financial stress," Detvarn said. "Iowa's young adults deserve the fundamental right to education, and this bill is what we as students need to help our success and our future." A bill introduced Wednesday by Iowa House Democrats would stop incoming college students at Iowa's public universities from seeing their tuition and fees hiked year over year, and would offer the institutions additional funding so they're less dependent on tuition dollars. House File 2352 would freeze tuition and mandatory fees for students admitted to the University of Iowa, University of Northern Iowa, and Iowa State University between July 2024 and July 2028, ensuring they pay the same amount the first 4 years of their undergraduate study. The bill would not bar the universities from raising tuition and fees each year, but it would lock in the amount that the students paid their first year. It would not apply to graduate students or undergraduates attending school from out of state. The bill also would require the legislature to appropriate enough money to keep the university's budget stable without the additional tuition they collect if the freeze wasn't implemented, said Representative Adam Zabner, Democrat Iowa City, at a press conference announcing the legislation. "Students and their families are struggling to afford the cost of higher education in Iowa as tuition and fees continue to increase and state funding does not," Zabner said. Quote, "We want to make sure we're still fully funding public education in the state," Zabner said. "But we also want to make sure that, ellipses, every Iowa family can make the choice and send their students to college if that's what they want to do." Zabner said that around 433,000 Iowans have student loan debt that averages out to more than $30,000. Last year, lawmakers appropriated less funding for state universities than they did in 1999. And in 2000, tuition rates at the University of Iowa totaled just under $1,500, compared to the more than $10,000 today. According to Iowa Board of Regents data, when the new millennium began, state appropriations accounted for more than 60% of Regent University general education funding, and tuition made up around 30%. Today, in fiscal year 2024, those numbers have flipped, with state appropriations covering almost 30% of funding and tuition accounting for almost 65%. Students are bearing the burden of education funding right now, Stebner said, and that's why it's important to ensure the universities are receiving adequate funding. As the Iowa Capital Dispatch previously reported, universities raised tuition for undergraduate students by 3.5% last June, following a 4.25% increase for the 2022-23 school year and varied increases in 2021. Iowa House Republicans have introduced legislation that would cap tuition and fee increases at 3% rather than freeze it for each new class. Representative Jennifer Confer said the lawmakers who introduced the legislation want the tuition freeze to be, quote, neutral, end quote, for the universities so they can avoid underfunded programs. The state has been underfunding the Iowa Board of Regents and the institutions it governs, she said, making them play catch-up by relying more heavily on tuition dollars. Quote, there's nothing left to cut at these institutions. They keep leaning on tuition, Confer said. They don't want to do this either. They would like it to be a better balance. The bill is part of the Iowa Democratic lawmakers' People Over Politics agenda, which includes initiatives to lower costs for Iowans, protect reproductive freedom, support public education, and legalize recreational marijuana for adults. Confer said other ideas they have proposed to lower costs for Iowa students is to extend and expand the Iowa sales tax holiday, raise the minimum wage to $15, and promote affordable housing. When asked whether the lawmakers had plans to help students attending private universities or community colleges, Confer said they're continuing to look at ways of supporting those students, including, quote, defending, end quote, the Iowa tuition grant program. Quote, today we're focused on Regents institutions, but absolutely, we want to make college affordable for everybody, Confer said. We're going to handle those separately. And that does it for today's reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for February 9th, 2024. I'm your reader, Stephen Gazier. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.